Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, thank you very much. That solves my dilemma of wondering what to do while it was completely silent while we walked onto stage. So thank you. It's lovely to be back in Newcastle for this Times Plus Game podcast event, an event we put on just for subscribers to The Times and The Sunday Times. So thank you for being here. Thank you for subscribing. I'm Alison. I'm a Times sports writer and podcaster. And with me this evening, I have Oliver Kay on my far left. He is the chief football correspondent for The Times. Next to him, George Colkin, who's our Northern sports correspondent. And I'm delighted that to my immediate left, I have a man. I don't need to explain who he is, but he has managed Real Madrid. He brought silverware to Chelsea at great pace. He was the architect of the miracle of Istanbul. And Rafa Benitez is now.
Thank you. That is more difficult than to be on the bench in front of me.
And he is now the Newcastle United manager. Let me explain the evening. It's very simple. Anyone here to see three billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri, you're in the wrong cinema. Otherwise, stay put. We're going to talk football, and then after a chat about Newcastle, football, everything we all love, we will open it up to you so you can ask questions.
Easy question, please.
Nice questions. But we will start with Newcastle, and this isn't about me at all, so I'm getting in early with the fact that yesterday I interviewed Alexander Mitrovic, who's a Newcastle player. He's gone on loan to Fulham. I went along to the training ground to chat to him, and I asked him, were you surprised that Rafa Benitez stayed with Newcastle when they went into the Championship? And he said, no, like me, Rafa believes Newcastle is one of the biggest clubs in the country, and they deserve to be managed by a great man who will take them to great things. So I thought, rather than let Mitrovic speak for Rafa, I would ask Rafa, why did you stay?
No, I think he's right. So I said before, and you can see this every single game, every day in the city, it's a massive club, and he has the potential to be, I will say, in the top 10. I don't want to say higher or whatever, but I think the club has the potential to be in the top 10 because you have a city behind the team. You have a lot of fans every single game at home and away supporting the team. We have to do the right things to be sure that we stay in the Premier League and this team can compete against. The top six are a little far away, but still you can compete against them if you do the right things. And for sure, for me, in the top 10 easily, if we do the right things.
But did you, I mean, we have portrayed you in the media as having fallen in love with not just the club's potential, but the people and the passion they have. Is that true?
Yeah, when I was, normally when I go to another team, I try to to know a little bit about the city, the fans, even the financial situation, everything. So the point here was when I went to Napoli. Napoli is a fantastic city, and then you have a lot of things that you can watch. And they were a kingdom of Spain, so they have the royal palace is very similar, the Teatro San Carlos. And here I did the same. I went to the castle, I went to the Angel of the North, and I was walking around. I had a problem here, that was the championship. You have so many games that you don't have time, so you have to go another game. So, but I like to see the city. I like to feel the passion of the fans. I like to see how the staff, how they are working in the club. And then a lot of things that I saw, for me, was at the beginning when we came, that was quite complicated. We didn't have too much time. We arrived on Thursday, I think we did the deal, and we have to train on Friday and then go to play against Leicester, that they were doing really well. So we didn't have too much time, but you could see the potential. You could feel the passion of the fans, the commitment. And what's for me, to stay in the Championship was quite difficult, because we didn't know, and I will say again, how difficult was the Championship. But we thought that we had a good team, and we have some good players with experience in the Championship, and they did really well. They did really well, and after, when we won the Championship, we said, oof, was a massive risk, but I think that you have the potential to do well in the Premier League. And that was the reason why. So the city, the fans, and the potential of the club, everything that was so positive that we decided to stay, and still we are happy with that. Then hopefully we can stay in the Premier League, and that will be, for me, the beginning of something more important, because we can compete against people if we do what we have to do.
I think there are times when we still have to pinch ourselves a little bit that Rafa did agree to stay. And I'm going to be a bit embarrassing here, and I apologise, but I think it's probably going to be okay with this audience. But Rafa is the best and most important thing that's happened to this club for many, many years.
So. I don't agree.
And very quickly, there are two reasons for that. There's his achievements as a manager, there's his CV, there's what he's done in the game, and of course there's then what he's done at Newcastle. Getting the team up from the Championship is a huge achievement. I think people look at it from afar and think Newcastle are a big club because of the number of supporters they've got, and so it should be easy, but it's not. It's an incredibly difficult division to get out of, very competitive, and it's also a graveyard for big, big clubs. And Newcastle aren't one of those clubs, and we have Rafa to thank for that. The other thing is a more emotive thing. Hearing Rafa sit here talking about potential and size and stature and history of Newcastle is something vitally important, because it's something that just hasn't been on the radar for Newcastle fans in the preceding years. And I don't need to kind of go into that at all, but what Rafa represents is a connection between supporters and the club. And I think in the past that had been in danger of being frayed. And he persuades people to be ambitious about their football club, to have aspirations about their football club. And he represents both love and hope. And although those are very difficult things to evaluate in a tangible way, they're incredibly important. So thank you, Rafa.
Thank you. But I would say, for me, it's a big problem every single day when we lose a game, when we made mistakes or whatever. I'm really suffering for the fans. And now it's a situation that you say, well, we have to do everything right if we want to win. Then even when you make a substitution, say, why you change Kennedy, and then you have to keep him, blah, blah, blah. So I am suffering, but not because I don't think that I was wrong. It's just because I know that every single decision will have an impact in a lot of people. They believe in me. They trust me. You could win a lot of games with just doing sometimes nothing. But in this case, every single decision for me is so much responsibility in terms of to do well, because I have a lot of fans behind. I will not be worried about, oh, if I made a mistake, that's it. No, it's just because you know that you have a lot of people following the team, and I want to be right.
Ollie, what does the club mean to you?
My first experience of Newcastle United as a club was as a seven-year-old boy being taken to Shrewsbury, because Kevin Keegan was going to play there that day. It was September 1982. I just had to look it up. Mick Shannon was in the team. Kevin Keegan was in the team, and it was this. You know, my dad was saying, "This is great that Newcastle are coming to town." And having looked it up, Newcastle lost that day 2-1. Imre Vardy scored. I'm sure you all remember it very well. But what one thing that really stays with me is that the Newcastle fans were at one end of the ground, all had their shirts off, and it was a scene that would probably be replayed many, many times that I would see over the following decades. But no,
I was going to come tonight without my top on.
It wasn't even a particularly cold day. The fact is, it would probably have been the same in January. But it was, that always stuck with me as a very young lad, and that there was something a bit different about Newcastle's fans. And Alex, who's our sports editor, who's here tonight, 2 years ago, just before Rafa was appointed, he sent me up to Newcastle for the day to take the pulse of the city. George was off at the time.
No, it wasn't.
No, you weren't. At any time you see George is off on holiday, you know there's going to be a huge crisis at Newcastle or at Sunderland. He takes a lot of holidays.
Sorry.
I came to Newcastle, and Rafa's name had just begun to appear in the press in the build-up to that, after Steve McLaren had been sacked. And I was asking people about, what should Newcastle do? I mean, it looked like they were going to get relegated. And the fans, I went into one of the pubs near the station, and the fans were saying, no way will Rafa Benitez come. He's only just come out of Real Madrid. Look at the state of us. And the fact that he came, I mean, no doubt shocked a lot of you, but it shocked me as somebody who had, worked quite closely with him when he was at Liverpool. And I thought it was a really brave move. And it was even braver to stay after the relegation, because it looked like he was on a hiding to nothing. And that feat in getting promoted is, as George said, is a far bigger achievement than a lot of people realise. I mean, look at the three clubs that went down from the Premier League last season. They're all struggling. Aston Villa had a terrible season last year and a sort of slowly rebuilding. But what Rafa has done in terms of, I'm going to say, steadying that ship, maybe it doesn't feel as steady yet as it could do, but I think it would feel a lot less steady without Rafa. So,
and can you talk a little bit about that day against Tottenham Hotspur? So it was the Newcastle won 5-1 that day, and I know you've talked about this a lot, but it was such an incredible day because Newcastle were down, and it could have been a day about anger. People could have been very angry and upset and vented their opinions like that, but instead it was 90 minutes of love towards you. Have you ever experienced anything like that before, and how did it make you feel? How did it make you feel to look back on that now?
I was quite lucky because Liverpool or even Napoli or a lot of teams, Extremadura, when I was in Tenerife, so the fans normally, if you win, they love you. So, but in this case, we were relegated already, and the fans, they saw the passion, the commitment and the support. For me, for the club, that was the time that you were thinking carefully, listen, I think that maybe we can stay, maybe not. So it was a difficult decision at the beginning, but then the atmosphere and after the conversation that I had with Mike Ashley was, I think it's right, I was talking with my family to stay in England in a massive club to be sure that we could go up and then build something. So always in football, you talk about project, so we have to develop a project, you need 5 years. So I was thinking that maybe here you could do something really, really big for the future and then compete against the teams and win trophies. So it's something that I like to do. I don't lie when I say we'll compete in the FA Cup, in the Carabao Cup now, with the players that we have, with the squad that you have. So I want to win, but I cannot lie the fans, oh, I will play my strongest team, because you have your big two or three injuries and then you have problems for the league. So I like to compete, I like to win, and here you have the potential. Then I would say again, it's always the same thing. So we have to do things right.
Yeah.
When I have to write the program notes, he said, all the fans, you understand, we have to stick together and be united, because it's the only way. So it's the only way if you want to survive is to stick together. And I think that the fans, they realize that after, what they have is some journalists telling them things and then they change the... No, after what they have is the passion as a football fans. They say, why you play this? Why you don't play the other one? So that is normal. But the passion that you have here, the unity, the city behind the team, that is the key if we want to be stronger in the future.
And is the relationship Is it similar to what you had at Liverpool? Because we talk about Liverpool a lot. Your family still live there. We know that, and they're kind of heavily based in that area. But it feels something very similar to that, an emotion.
Very similar in one way. When I was walking through the street in Liverpool, and they talked to me in a Scouse accent, I don't understand. Your reaction is the same. No, it's very similar to be serious now. Very similar because it's the city, the fans, the passion, people behind the team. So it's very, very similar. And then that is something that you like to enjoy. When I was in Italy or in Spain, it's totally different. So you can be winning 5-0 and still you can see in some stadiums the fans say, okay, fine, good enough. And then you go to Italy and then you are winning 1-0 and still they are pushing you. And if you lose, you have to stay at home. Stay for 1 week and see what happens. So, and he said, no, honestly, it's like this. So it's not. I am not exaggerating. Then here, the passion and the support and everything is very similar to Liverpool. And it's something that you as a manager, you enjoy. I was telling them off the record before, that when the fans are singing in any stadium, I am not focused on that. I can hear my name here. That is the only thing that I can understand. But the other things is just, I am focused on the game. Then you try to be polite, to concentrate on the game, and I appreciate that. So for me, it's really good, and I'm really pleased for that. But it's very similar because the fans, they support the team, they support the manager, and we are lucky enough this year to have a group of players that they give everything. So we can do well, I can be right or wrong, but we give everything, and I think the fans, you appreciate that.
One added factor this season is, and I'd like to explore what all three of you think about it and why it's happening, is that there are 11 clubs that could go down. It's an 11-way relegation battle. I don't remember anything like this. It's so tight. Does anyone want to start off with a suggestion as to why right now it is ridiculous in the bottom half of the table?
I think if you look at the Premier League, look at the financial situation in the Premier League, it's basically a sort of a league of six and a league of 14 within that 20. And I think probably Newcastle fans would hope that it would be a league of seven and a league of 13. But that's the way it's been the last, I'd say, 6 or 7 years, with the utterly bizarre, freakish exception of Leicester and what they did two seasons ago. And I think since then, it's just got back to normal. But I also think that the more time that goes, the bigger that divide becomes between the 6 and the 14.
But then this season, no one is adrift. I mean, there's nobody adrift, is there?
At the bottom, well, there isn't a poor team in the division, in my opinion. I mean, West Brom still bottom?
Yes.
West Brom are...
And they're a little bit adrift.
West Brom are 4 points adrift, and they're a decent team. They're not like the Sunderland team of last season. But there have been a few real sort of sad cases in the Premier League. There was a terrible Derby team at some stage, and it looks like there are 6 very good teams and 14 very competent teams, and 3 good teams are going to go down, and most of them have got good players, and the ones who have got less good players, maybe, you know, if you look at Brighton or Bournemouth or Huddersfield, they've come up from the Championship with momentum, and I think it's in some ways easier for those clubs when they come up with that momentum and when it's all exciting and new than it is for a club like Newcastle, who are coming up and it's not new, it's just normality.
I don't have a theory for it, but I'm terrified every time I open the paper. And it is that thing where there's just no gap. I mean, there is not a gap. Normally, you would be saying that one team, they've gone, or two teams, they've gone. And so the rest are fighting to not be the third team that goes down, and there's just nothing. You couldn't say with any certainty that West Brom are going to go down. They've got good players. So I don't have any theories behind it, but it's terrifying.
I mean, there's this thing about matches being, it's a six-pointer. Well, they're all six-pointers. What's it like managing in that framework as opposed to the normal one?
I said in a press conference that maybe it's positive because you have more teams than someone else will make a mistake. But at the same time, you are under the same pressure because you cannot make mistakes. And you can see we had a very bad run, but Huddersfield now has a very bad run, and Bournemouth has a very bad run. You can lose 4 games in a row if you are not lucky. Every team has the same problem. You play Manchester City, United, and after you lose against a team of your league, and then you have Liverpool after, then you have lost already 4 games in a row. And that is the problem. The gap is so big. Sometimes not just on the pitch, but when you see in a whole season, every game, when you have a bigger squad, you can change players and you can win even with your players that are not playing too many games. That is a big difference. And then you see the difference between 7th, I think it was Everton last year, and 8th was 15 or 20 points. So that is the reason why I have confidence that if we do well and we stay in the Premier League, next year you can be in the top 10, because just maybe you will be 15 points behind the 6th or whatever, but you can be there. If you have the player with the experience that they can keep you there, then the next year is easier to build from bringing 2 or 3 players, and then they can make a big difference. Now, for us, you can see Huddersfield, you can see Brighton, you need to sign players, and they have to settle down in the Premier League, and they are right, fine, but if not, you are suffering until the end. Teams like Bournemouth or Burnley, that they have already been there for 2 or 3 years, they have players that maybe anyone here, any Newcastle United fan would say, I will not sign this player from any of these teams. I don't want to be disrespectful. But I am sure that this player will do a job for us, because has been 5 years in the Premier League. He knows the division. He knows what he has to do, when he has to waste time, when he has to attack or to defend. And we are sometimes missing that, because always I say, it's a young team. So we are learning. And sometimes you say, oh, you have to learn quicker. But we are learning and we are trying to do well in a division with a lot of teams, with a lot of experienced players.
When Rafa's talking about that and the learning process of this team, I looked at the team that went down, the Newcastle team that went down in 2009. It was a very talented team, but a team that seemed to have no real heart to it. And I was watching the game at Palace the other day, and it seemed like it was a very honest performance. It was a performance full of heart, and it's not the most skillful team Newcastle have seen, certainly, and it's probably not the most skillful team amongst those other 14 in the Premier League, but it seems to me that it's a team that you probably can rely on to...
Yes, what I'm trying to say every week, then you are so close, 5 minutes to go, and then you can win against Burnley, and then it will be totally different. But you have Everton, you hit the post twice, and then you can see an awful goal, and then we are so close that this lack of experience means a lot, because when we concede against Leicester, the last 5 minutes they were just corner, throw in, but wasting time. It's something that you have to learn how to do it. And then for us, the main problem is that we cannot score the second goal and then maybe have more chances to win the game, and that's it. So we are 1-0 up and then we concede because we are not managing the situation. Some people, even at home in Spain, my family say, why you put the team, go the team back? No, I'm not doing that. They are pushing you. And then you try to push them, but sometimes they push harder. So then you try to stay there. You try to manage the situation. But the other teams, Crystal Palace was very clear. And I know, because I was talking with them, that they needed to control our midfielder, because we were controlling the middle. Then they have 2 strikers, and they changed Saha to the left side, and MacArthur was in the middle. And then he was linking really well. He was doing 1v1 overlaps from the fullbacks that were going forward. Then we have more pressure, and we couldn't manage in the wide areas and in the middle, so we have to defend. Then the way to attack them is just you go, you keep the ball, and then all the counter-attack that we have in the second half. And if you don't do that, you have to defend. It's not that you want to defend and you are dropping off because you want to be safe. No, it's because they are pushing you. So this change of players for us was a big problem, because we couldn't manage. And also, we have Diame that is doing well. He was limping a little bit. He has a problem. Then we have to make another substitution. So I would say Kennedy, that people say, oh, you were wrong with Kennedy. But they were attacking, and I wanted to be more solid in the wide area that we have problems. So these kind of things, it depends on the players that you have, you can manage. So when you criticize the tactics of the manager, sometimes some people were telling me, oh, Joselu will play again. And Joselu had a virus and was at home. So they were criticizing me early before, and when he couldn't even play. So these things that you have to understand as a manager, maybe if you go to Huddersfield, if you go to Brighton, they will not feel this pressure. They are over the moon to stay in the Premier League. Mm-hmm. For the Newcastle United fans, for this club, you have to stay there. And you have to be in the middle of the table. That is a big difference. And when George was talking about last year in the championship, I was telling them in every press conference, 30% of the teams that they were relegated, they promote, just 30%. So players, they need support.
You're obviously very used to working in cities that are sort of obsessional about football. I mean, whether it's Madrid, whether it's Liverpool, and of course Newcastle, where it's the only club and it's right in the middle of the city. It's the focal point of the city. But do you relate to that obsession, I suppose? Because, I mean, I think you're probably an obsessional manager. And is there any time that you don't think about football? And what do you do? What do you do when you're not
playing cards?
That's true. That's Moose. That's the Spanish card.
We have a Spanish game that is Moose, M-U-S. That is very funny. And then we lost today. To be fair, I lost, so I was really upset. But no, I like to play chess. But now you play against the machines, and they are winning all the time. And I play cards, and then yeah, I stay with the family when I go the weekends.
But there were some lovely quotes in the papers at the weekend when you were talking about being with your family and trying to talk about something else, and then suddenly you're moving the salt and pepper pots and doing 4-4-2.
So many times. My wife said, go away from the kitchen because she started changing everything. She's changing the tactics. I prepared the team, 4-4-2, well organized, and then she changed the tactics and put... It's killing me. So we lose because of that. So. We are organized. No, but... Now, I like football, and now when you are getting older, then you have to think about other things. But what I like is also my staff. Today we were analyzing the game and watching the clips, and then one of the members of the staff has meetings with players and then talking about the clips. Look, you were doing this, that. Another one is with two or three players doing some finishes or some crosses. So we work on all these things. And then even when we miss chances or when we make mistakes, you say, oh, you are not working during the week. Yeah, we are working really hard. Every day, every week, we have a lot of people taking care of the players and trying to give them advice and trying to improve them. But still, you play against another one. And the other one maybe is doing the same. That is one important thing. The Premier League has improved also in terms of the level of the managers. Because you have more foreign managers coming with different ideas, more young English managers coming, learning from anyone, and then you have better managers, and then there's the reason why you can change managers and still the new managers, they're doing well. They think, oh, this manager is the one. It's because you have better managers now, too.
What is it that you're searching for? I mean, are you in search of the perfect game of football? Does that exist? I mean, is that what you're... And what is it that drives... Because you talked about managing on into your 70s. What is it about the game that still intrigues you like that?
Before, it depends on the countries. In Spain, the games are more technical and tactical. So Spain has a very good experience with the coaches and the young players. They have won under 21s, under 18s, under 17s. They have won a lot of trophies and obviously the World Cup. So Spain has a culture of coaching technically and tactically really well, the players. You go to Italy, and in Italy, they are really good tactically. So the Italians, they stop you playing. They know how to do it. And then they change the system 3-4 times during the game. 5-3-2, we play 5-4-1, 4-4-2. And if you lose the game, you have 7 interviews after the game. And each TV or each, normally it's the TVs, they have 4 people, 4 experts, asking you the most difficult questions. But then when you answer 4 questions, then you go to the next TV, and then you have another 4 questions. So everyone has to make you the most difficult question to answer. Then you have 1 hour answering questions about tactics. You didn't realize that they changed to 4-4-2. It's like this every single game. Then you come to England, and when I came to England...
You've never had one tactical question.
But still you are learning, so... When I came to England, this is a midfielder. Which kind of midfielder? Box to box. It's box to box. It's a holding, no, box to box. So it has to be box to box. Energy. So what he's doing? Tackles. Oh, he's great doing tackles. Then one of my assistants, his son was in the school. He was playing in the team. Then he was going to watch him. So in Spain, when you start with the kids, the warm up, they start passing the ball. And here they were taking corners. Corners and then throw in. So it's a different culture. That was the reality. But now, what I said before, you have more foreign managers, the English managers they are learning, and then you pick something from this one that is coming from Portugal, this one that is coming from Spain, this one from Italy. They are taking things from everyone. And now you can see when they talk about the tactics. You play against Manchester City, oh, you play defensive, blah, blah, blah. But the majority of the teams is 4-1-4-1, 5-4-1, whatever. So they have tactics that in the past you couldn't expect. And you will say, oh, that is not right for English football. But if you do that, you can win more games in Europe. If you don't do that, will be attacking football, everybody will be excited, but they still will be too open, and you will lose games against teams that they are well-organized tactically and they have quality. So that is the bad thing about tactics, because you have more control, and the good thing, because you can win more games in a long term.
It's funny, when George asked Rafa about, are you looking for the perfect game? I remember being at a game, a Champions League game at Liverpool, where they beat Besiktas 8-0. At Anfield, which is still the record for a Champions League group game, for a Champions League game, which equals your own record. So you've got the two biggest wins in the Champions League. But after that game, Rafa was asked, come on, Rafa, that was perfect, wasn't it? He was, no. he was pointing out where he'd gone wrong. And, you know, I think you are a true perfectionist.
This game, I think, I don't want to be wrong, but I think Peter Crouch hit the crossbar, so it wasn't perfect.
It could be nice, Robert.
And when I finish the game, sometimes I talk with players, because the way that I like to coach, and it depends on each player, is to teach them, not to tell them. So you have to make them think about the problem and find the solution. Then you have to tell him, listen this. And we go, we explain to them, we go to the clips, we analyze the clips, we go to the pitch, we train on the pitch, and then we start the process again. So then if something is wrong, you have to watch, you have to train, and then perform during the games. That is the way. Then if you give them 2 days off, so in England, when you don't play the FA Cup, you have 15 days. So some clubs say, oh, Dubai, 1 week, or whatever. And then you have to tell them something, because if not, they will go to Dubai to play golf, and then you don't have time to talk with them and correct things. It's true.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Can I have a show of hands, please? Who, in 2005, you're watching the Champions League final, 3-0 at half-time to AC Milan. Hands up, those of you who thought, game's over, might go and do the ironing. Not me.
I certainly didn't do the ironing, but no.
No, but you will ask me about that, and I will tell you, they don't understand me now, because my English is not good enough. Imagine 2005.
But what, I know you've spoken about it a lot, but it was the miracle of Istanbul. Has it become to you almost like a dream? Do you feel like, can that have really happened? Or are you very pragmatic? It was just another match. I did my job.
No.
How do you look back on it?
No, it's not another match, because I know I was... I always will say that I think it's the best final ever in terms of emotion, not the game. The game was, I don't know if I can ask you the same question, but we changed at halftime. We were playing with four, and we changed to three in the back. I put Didi Hamann in the middle. That day was, I wanted to be offensive, and to be fair, if you analyze, the AC Milan team was the best team at this time, miles away of the others. And I wanted to be proactive, they say I would play with Alonso and Gerard, but we leave a big gap, because Gerard is, At this time, Steve was a box to box. He was going there. We had a big gap in the middle. Then after, when we put the Didi Hammer, we have more control. So tactically was good. But you cannot do anything, even tactically, if you don't have Stevie there, or you have Schmeisser scoring, or Alonso the goal. So the team was little by little believing that we could do it, but at halftime. So I said this so many times. We were losing 2-0, and I was taking my note, and you know that I'm taking notes all the time. And I said, 2-0 down, what can I say? And it was nearly halftime, and I said, what can I say in English? That is quite difficult. And some of you maybe, I don't know if you coach a team, but when you have to explain something, halftime, you don't have, it has to be very clear. You don't have time, and the message has to be right, and the body language has to be right. So in English, you are losing 2-0. When I was taking my notes, we conceded the third goal. I said, 3-0 now. So, then I was walking to the dressing room thinking, what can I say in English? And I said, come on, nothing to lose. We're working very hard, blah, 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 blah. But the main thing was the tactics. So I said to Didi Hammond, with Paco Yesterán, the fitness coach, go to do the warm-up. And then I explained the tactics, and he went to do the warm-up. And after, when I finished, I don't know if you know that, but because this story has been 200 times, I don't know. When I finished the team talk, everything was organized. Then I went to see the physio, Dave Galli, that was working with on Finan. And Finan said, what is going on? Because we have one substitution, Harry Kewell, that was changed in 20 minutes with an injury. And then I had Didi Hammond ready. And then Dave was working with Steve with Finan. He said, what is going on? No, he has a problem here. I think he cannot play 45 minutes, he told me. So what? No, you have to make a substitution. And Finan was watching him like, oh, I will kill him. And I was thinking, oh. And I have already told Jimmy Traore that he could go to the shower. And I was thinking, oh, I have two substitutions, and Didi and Finan will not play 45 minutes, 3-0 down in English, so what I have to say. Then I said, Jimmy, come back. Finan, go to the shower. Finan was killing the physio, and Jimmy Traore was, okay, fine, ready. And then we played three in the back with Traore. Instead, I wanted to play Carra with Sami Hypia and Finan. And then we changed Finan. We put Traore on the left side with Carra. So just make this decision in 1 minute, because I was losing one substitution already, and I needed the substitution at the end. So it was so difficult, the final, against a very good team. And they were celebrating at halftime. So they were, we have already won. That is, for me, is the best final ever. But not just because the way that everything was going on outside, also inside, was quite difficult. A lot of people, and it's a big name, I will not say the name, but he was at halftime, he left. And after, when we drew and then we won, oh, no, yeah, I was watching, I have to believe. I know that. It's not true. And even the story that they told me, the grandfather with his grandson, they were watching the game, and the grandfather went to sleep. And in the morning, the grandson was telling him, listen, we have won, we won, we won. He said, no, it's a dream. He thought that was a dream. He said, no, no chance. No, that is true, eh? It's a real story. He thought that was a dream. He said, no. Then this time, the way that everything was going on, it was massive. And obviously, the fans, they love me for that. And that is, can we replicate something like this here? So I would not say the Champions League, but we need to stick together, because the passion and the feeling from the fans is very similar.
Is it true that the Milan players had T-shirts on underneath, and you knew that, and used that?
No, we didn't know. We knew that after, that they were celebrating. Even I said that Gattuso made a mistake, because when you go through the tunnel and you have the cup there, and you cannot touch the cup because it's bad luck, and he touched the cup. So that was a problem for them.
Yeah. It's interesting that Rafa said that after that, the Liverpool fans loved him, because I remember going to Cardiff for the League Cup final 3 months before that, and the season wasn't going perfectly in the league, was it? You'd gone out to the FA Cup, to Burnley, it had been a difficult first season in some ways, and all your hopes were in those two cup competitions. And yet I remember walking up to the ground in Cardiff, where the Millennium Stadium is right in the city centre, and there were people carrying around this sort of gold-framed portrait, Ayatollah style, of Rafa, and there was this huge emotional investment in Rafa from a very early stage, and I always got the impression you seemed quite kind of shocked and bewildered by that because before you'd won something. But it's the same here, isn't it? You know, everyone just sees you as this figure who's going to make everything okay. Yeah, no pressure.
No, but I remember now one thing, and I forgot about that in the final, and now this final, because both finals we won on penalties, and people say, oh, you were lucky. No, the first thing is to be in the final, winning so many games against Juventus, blah, blah. So it's not luck. It's just that you have a team that well organized and working really hard. But the final in Istanbul, from five of the penalty takers, we knew four of them where they were taking the penalties. And in Cardiff was the same with West Ham. So we have Pepe Reina on goal. And then we knew, because we have a database that we are working on that. It's not, we are not successful because on mornings I wake up and say, oh, we'll do this, that, and that's it. So a lot of staff, a lot of people working really hard. We knew the penalties. And normally the keeper has an advantage if you know. Now what happened? You have the TV and they put you this, that, that, that. But at this time, not too many people knew that. Then for us was an advantage. They talk about Jerzy Dudek in the Grobbelaar dance, and Carragher telling him, but believe me, four we knew where were they taking the penalties. And this is a great advantage if you want to win trophies. When you win in the cups, sometimes it's just these little things. So to do something similar here, so I know that the fans, they were
you'll get us too excited.
They were very excited with the Cavs and all these things, but it's just a question of time to settle down and start working on building something really important for the future.
When you look at your career, do you, I mean, I don't know if you ever look back on it, but do you regard it, do you rate it in terms of the things that you've won in the past, or do you just say to yourself, I was at Chelsea, I was at Liverpool, I was in Madrid, it was interesting, it was exciting, it was difficult? How do you look back on your career like that?
No. I want to win more trophies if it's possible. I want to do well. I want to win every game. But sometimes now you have to be realistic. And when I was in Napoli, I knew that playing against Juventus was very difficult. So you know all these things. But still you want to win trophies and you want to do well. And you want to create something. So I'm really pleased when I can see former players doing well. We had Coutinho. And a lot of people want to give me massive credit for Coutinho. Coutinho, when we signed for Inter Milan, he came there, was a young player. And then he was coming from Brazil, he couldn't talk Italian, so we take care of him, and he was growing and improving, and we were happy. So these things, for me, are also really important, but people will realize or will remember just the trophies, but I think to build something and to bring players and to have players, when you were talking about Gerard at the end of the game, some people, oh, Rafa, he doesn't put the arm on the shoulder, blah, blah. I have a lot of players that after they realize, oh, I was learning, I was improving, and I'm a much better player now. And for me, it's like to win a trophy.
You mentioned it's unlucky to touch the cup before you've won it. Are you a superstitious person? Do you have a routine before any element of the game?
Not too much, to be fair. In Italy, we have, I will not say, one chairman that before the game, he was really, really superstitious. And then we kind of go purple. The tie cannot be purple, this cannot be this. So everything was, you have to be careful. Then he wanted to do a circle before the games and then shake hands and then start talking and that. And then we won one game when he did that.
On the pitch or in the dressing room?
In the dressing room. So we have to do it every game. He was coming, come on. One day, he was coming late. So I said, he's not coming. Oh, hopefully. Oh. But then he arrives the last minute. Come on, the circle. And we lost the game. I said, okay, fine. Finish that with the circle. Everywhere was, oh, well, I cannot say what he said during the talk, but hopefully he will not come. He was coming anyway.
Something you say quite often is football is a lie, but you love football, and football is everything to you. So what do you mean by that? Because it doesn't mean that you don't love football.
No, it means that I like to improve players, I like to coach players, I like to win trophies, I like to compete, I like to go every day in the training sessions and prepare routines for players. So I like all these things, and especially with young players. When I was in Liverpool doing nothing because I was fired, I went to see my daughter, and on Friday they had the kids, they have a training session, and then I was watching one of the parents was doing the coaching, and I was watching, and then the next week, so if you want, I can help. Okay, fine. So I was coaching the boys in the playground, and then I didn't say to you that, but 2 weeks after they have a game,
And they have against a team that the keeper was massive, and then he was throwing the ball there. And the throw-ins, long throw-ins, everything was... And they have the other team, they have a small rifle back. And this team, they have quite good talented left-footed in playing in the middle. And then at halftime, I said, listen, why you don't put this one? He's quick and has ability as a left winger against the rifle back. They did it and they won. And the other parents said, oh, listen, you have a professional giving you advice. It's not fair. Then I decided not to go anymore, because then you go there and then you have problems with people. So I like football and I like to coach and to teach the last part. But at the same time, what can I say here? Do you think that I can say everything that I know? I cannot. Because it will not be good for me, for the team, or whatever. Then the press, you have to write things, or you have to write things and you have to comment things or whatever. But you cannot say everything that is going on. Everything that is going on. I was telling you off the record before, and I would say on the record because it's not a big issue. One day, my mother called me and said, listen, why you don't call me? She said, what? No, you have to come and visit me. Why? I am in Liverpool. No, 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 you have been in Madrid. No, I was not in Madrid. Yeah, you were in Madrid. No, you were in this restaurant having dinner with this president or what, because they want to sign you. No, I am in Liverpool. No, but this newspaper is saying that. She couldn't trust me. Then that is the problem with sometimes the media now. Football is a lie because you cannot say everything. And some people saying something and they repeat the same lie all the time. And you think that it's true because you don't have the information. So then it's quite difficult when you know the truth that you cannot say anything. And still they are criticizing you for that, or they have an opinion about that. So in England, you say, you don't talk about tactics. Now you talk about tactics. So I don't know any pundit losing a game and they scream. So they win all the games. But for us, it's quite difficult. One manager was saying in an interview after the game, said, listen, your team was disorganized. Believe me, when we start the game, I organized the team. After they disorganized during the game. So he was saying that is true. So you cannot say everything and then you go tell the fans what you have to tell. After you tell your players what you think, it's a big lie because that you cannot say the truth. It's like this.
Yeah. Well, I was not lying when I said you could ask questions. Please ask maybe George and Ollie one, maybe to make them feel involved. But if you just want to talk to Rafa, that's absolutely fine.
I don't think we're the main attraction.
Just raise your hand and someone will come with a microphone. So if you could wait until the microphone is with you. That gentleman was fast off the mark.
The other guys can answer this as well, because my sense is that part of the genius of that guy sat in the middle is that he manages to...
We do our best.
He manages to manage the dressing room, the fans, as we've talked about a lot, the owners, which is difficult in this case, I'm sure, might be even worse at Chelsea, but also the media. And is that the panel's view, that that's what makes Rafa special? He seems to be a very honest communicator across those four distinct audiences.
George.
Yeah, I mean, as a manager now, you don't just manage your players, you have to manage up quite often. You're pressing your case to sign players, whatever, and of course you have to get your message across to fans, and you do it through the media. And I mean, Rafa is a consummate professional. He's brilliant with us. He's very communicative and explains kind of what's going on and explains what he can do. It's very interesting listening to you talk about your relationship with the players, because it feels like it's a sort of almost teacher-pupil kind of relationship, that you're trying to improve them and trying to make them better. But yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the great challenges at football clubs now. You sort of see what happens at a club like Chelsea, for example, that can win the title last season. I don't kind of report on Chelsea, but win the title last season, and then things can seem to disintegrate so quickly in public. And I think that's one of the skills of the modern manager. You're not just managing your players, you're managing above and sideways and below.
Also, it's a difference between foreign managers and the English managers, because the foreign managers, we were not managers, we were coaches. So we were coaching. And after, you have to manage. And some of the English managers, they just manage. They don't coach the team. So I like to coach my players. I like to be on the pitch with them. But at the same time, you know that you have to pass a message. I said before, I cannot say the truth, but I try to be honest. I don't lie to you. So we have a lot of
off the record conversation. I said, listen, I have to say that. The reality is this, but I cannot say that. And you have to have this relationship with the media. You have a lot of them, so someone will criticize you in an unfair way, but it's something that you have to understand and to accept. And the main thing for me is, with what you say to the fans, you pass this message to the fans, and they believe you, then it's right. And then you have to trust the manager that I will not tell you a lie. So if I cannot say anything, I will not say anything, but I will not tell you a lie.
And one very important thing that I know that Raf has repeated time and time again this evening, and with good reason, at this stage, at this point, it doesn't matter. Nothing at Newcastle matters now, apart from results and getting to the end of the season and staying up. And everybody has to be behind them.
Yeah, I was trying to give this message also after a lot of press conference. Some fans, they expect me to criticize the club, to criticize the owner, and now it's not the point. So I don't need to do that. Internally, we have been talking about that, and they know my opinion. But now is the time to stick together and try to get 3 points against this team, because it will be a massive difference. And sometimes it's just the support of the fans that make the difference. It's not just my tactics, or it's the feeling that the players have when they try to do something and the fans say, okay, try again. So one of the games, one of our players was making a mistake, and I called him to the touchline and said, listen, try again, it's the only way. So if they understand that and they have this feeling, that it's not easy for a young team, and we will be a little bit better. But if we criticise our players, then they will feel the pressure and we'll make more mistakes.
Do you think it's important that you're able to communicate with Newcastle fans directly at something like this? Because I don't see Mourinho doing this. I don't see Jurgen Klopp or Guardiola. But I get the impression that you feel there is an importance in sort of protecting that bond and...
Maybe the difference also is that when you are in a massive club with top class players that you pay millions and millions for them, sometimes they can do their job on their own. You don't need the manager protecting them. They have to take responsibility and they can do what they do well. That is the reason why they are paid at this level. So our players is a group of young players that they have the commitment, the passion, and we have to understand that. And it's a massive club.
My answer to your question would be, I cover a lot of football in the south of England, and the dignity... Someone has to do it. The dignity that Rafa showed when he was at Chelsea, it's hard enough being given the title interim manager, although I think most Chelsea managers are interim managers. But there were fans who just did not want Rafa there because of his connections, mainly with Liverpool, really. You handled it beautifully and managed to bring them silverware just to sort of rub it in. It was superb. So he does have the magic touch. Do you want to say a word about time at Chelsea?
Yeah, well, they said so many times, I have a very good time there. The staff, players, the atmosphere was really good every single day in the training sessions. And we didn't have any problem at all with the staff and the people that was close to us every day, and they were really pleased. We were going to the games, and at the beginning was a small group of fans. After, it was growing because some people maybe were interested in that. But we knew already, so we had the game against Middlesbrough in the cup, and I say live in the TV, listen, I will leave at the end of the season, so just concentrate on your team, support the team. And since this day, the atmosphere was much positive. Everybody was just supporting the team. And then you have a group of fans that say, okay, fine, fair enough. But the rest of the fans, and I was going through the streets, and the fans would tell me, listen, you are doing a good job. So it was more the perception of the media. Oh, this is happening. So we have fans with an A4. Rafa, listen, come on. Do a little bit better. No, but then it wasn't a problem for me. We were just concentrated. We were enjoying. And to be fair, at the end, we went to America for a couple of games against Manchester City. And we were in New York. And I have messages and I have the board telling me, thank you very much. You did a great job. And people there said, hopefully you could stay because you have done a great job. And the way that we were coaching and training them, they were really pleased with that. So inside was much better than the perception outside.
I haven't forgotten there are people upstairs. So there's a gentleman in the front row of the balcony.
You kind of failed to detect that in this part of the world, if you are born 10 miles either side of the river Thames, you're born with black and white eyes. It's like a religion. And it's my sincere hope that when you eventually ride off into the sunset, into your retirement, whenever that might be, you have black and white eyes as well. But the question I have for you is, if you were granted a wish by your fairy godmother, and she said, what kind of player would you like for your team, Newcastle? Would you buy a creative midfielder who creates chances, or would you buy a devastating striker who makes his own chances and scores goals? What is it you would like to have most, just the one player?
It's an easy question, and it's a tricky question. The question is about my team now. So this team, what I would like to sign, or ideally, what I would like to sign. If it's ideally a midfielder, I was a midfielder, I was a sweeper at this time when you were playing with a sweeper. So I was a midfielder, and I like it, this position. And I think it's a key position. So you have a midfielder that he can understand the game, your team will play better. So I think it's a crucial position. Obviously, if you have a striker that's scoring goals, then it can make the difference. But I had this discussion in Italy before. Normally, you know, the spine of the team, the keeper, the centre back, the midfielder, and the striker are key players. Because if you have these players, you have a good keeper, a good centre back, that they can talk and they can manage the others, and a midfielder and a striker, you have everything. And the other players, they will move around. But I was playing as a midfielder, and my last year playing for Linares, I was League One, and I was injured. I had problems always with my knee, and I was injured at this time. The last 3 months, the manager told me, listen, you stay there in the middle of the pitch, just talking. So what I have to do? I needed to talk, and come here, go there, blah, 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 blah.
Ollie, who do you think, well, what position do Newcastle need to fill, would you say?
Well, I don't really want to offend anyone that Newcastle have at the moment, but, I mean, Rafa, throughout his time, towards the end at Liverpool, he had Fernando Torres at his peak, and I imagine a sort of peak Fernando Torres would have improved any team. A peak Steven Gerrard, peak Xabi Alonso, peak Javier Mascherano, and without wishing to be disrespectful to anybody at Newcastle, Rafa's working with a different quality of player now, and I think it's got to be all about, you know, making it more than the sum of its parts. I think Rafa's teams have always been more than the sum of their parts, but I think it's getting even more out of those individual parts, isn't it, now?
It's also, the Premier League, the level is so high that it's not just a couple of players. You need a team to be sure that you can cope with the quality of the other teams.
It's probably not one for Rafa, and possibly not for George, because I know what he'll say. But
you have two options now, eh?
when we stay up this season, would you recommend, if the ownership doesn't change, that Rafa should stay at Newcastle or not?
I don't see why George can't answer that, but I think Rafa will get offers. I think he's had offers before. I think he had offers after the relegation, and he will have offers. So it's not a case of Rafa needing to sort of make his case to Newcastle. I think it's Newcastle needing to be Rafa's best option. And I think having committed 2 years ago and committed even last summer, it looks like he's in it. You know, it looks like he's very invested in it and so on. But he would need to know, I think, that there's the ambition to keep moving on. And it must be very... I think it must be quite disheartening at the moment in the Premier League for those clubs who have been sort of faced with a glass ceiling in seventh, eighth place, where they feel like they can't get up to the top six. And Newcastle haven't been at that level for a good while. And I think it would be a good aim to get to that point, and then maybe Newcastle could be the ones to break that glass ceiling. But I think there needs to be some more good news from the boardroom to persuade Rafa and persuade everyone, really, persuade the fans that there's a plan to sort of move on.
Yeah, I'll say something very brief. I mean, my opinion is I've expressed that enough times, I think, and I'll continue to do that. I don't think that's the right thing to talk about tonight, and the reason I say that is because Rafa's here with the club's blessing and agreement, and for all that we have disagreements, whether as journalists and clubs, there is a great willingness on the club's behalf to be open and to engage, and I think that tonight is a perfect example of that. So I kind of want to say that. What I said at the start, when Rafa, you know, I found very emotional when Rafa came and talked about history, size, potential. I want Newcastle to be that club. And it would be terribly sad if Newcastle weren't that club. In the meantime, I'm going to enjoy him for every second that he's here.
Bit of a lighter question. Your house is burning down. You can only save one of your trophies. Which one do you pick?
Championship.
They are in the basement. Thanks a lot. People think about the trophies. We have won 13 plus three promotions. Some people, they forget that three promotions are even more important sometimes than a trophy because it's more difficult to promote. I will not say with Newcastle United that the championship is quite difficult, but Extremadura or Tenerife, I am really proud of my promotion. Extremadura was very, very difficult. Extremadura is a small team in Almendralejo, in Badajoz, in Spain. They have 28,000 people in the city or in the village, and they were relegated. And then they didn't have a manager, and they come for me, and we promoted when we lost the majority of the top-class players that they had, and it was so difficult, but we promoted with a small team and a small village.
And the same question to George. Great North Run?
Great North Run medal, yes. Yeah. Cycling, I was born in 1970, and I've reported on one Northeast trophy in that time, which is Middlesbrough in the League Cup, so I don't have a huge collection to choose from. Yeah. I'd probably save my cycling proficiency badge from 1982.
Personally, 25 metres swimming. Okay. So.
I was Leighton Orient Ladies Player of the Season once. Gentlemen.
Firstly, given the propensity for loans from the big clubs, do you think we're heading towards a Spanish style where the big clubs are actually going to populate the lower leagues with B teams, as they do in Spain? And also, on a Newcastle point of view, how far away do we think Jamal Lascelles is from an England call-up, given his performances this season compared to other people in his position?
Yeah, well, the first one.
So, are we getting closer to having B teams, clubs having B teams in this country? I think that's where.
I'll go back to Lascelles. I think Lascelles is growing and is improving and he's doing well, but he still is a young player and he has plenty of room for improvement, but he's working really hard to be better. So I think it was a question of time. So I prefer if he stay calm and they don't distract him too much, but it's a question of time that he will go and he will do well with England. The B team, maybe you will remember, but the B team situation, when I was in Liverpool, I said before, and they were, oh, you are attacking the tradition, and, because I said, why the B teams are not playing in the Championship, for example? They said, oh, no, because we have big clubs there in the Championship, or it's not fair. When I was in Madrid, I was the coach of the second team of Real Madrid, and we were playing in the second division, the Championship, and our team was 19, 20 years old. So the oldest was 21. They could see the best players of Real Madrid in the future, they could see them playing in, we were going to Huelva, for example, and you're going to Huelva, imagine Almendralejo, you go to small places with the best players, they will be the stars of the future. And then these players, they didn't have experience, but they have a lot of quality. Then if you can compete, why you cannot stay there? They will play better football, and for the fans, will be nice. Then if your team is stronger than them, they will be in the Championship. But then why you would say no to a team with Steven Gerrard or Michael Owen or Carragher when they were 18, 19 years old, all together playing in the Championship? Why not? You would see the best players in the country in the future playing in front of you and could be fine. And you will improve the level. The under-23 league now, that was the under-21, is a way to give some players, some young players, more football. I think this year the Premier League has less young players playing than ever. Why? Because you need to win because the money is so big. And everybody's bringing players with experience to compete and to win. So you will not give chances to the young players only if they are really, really good. But the majority of the teams, they don't have an academy with five stars that they can play in the Premier League already. So I think it's an opportunity for young players to play in another level and to compete against senior players, and they will be better, and I think that can be good also for England in the future.
We have time for only one more question, and no pressure, I'd like it to be a really good one. So there's a chap in the balcony who's had his hand up a while.
So let's go back to the very start, Alison. You were speaking to Mitrovic in Fulham.
I was, yes.
And there's a lot of my friends who have a lot of time for Mr. Mitrovic, and we don't really understand what it is that went wrong between Rafa and Mitrovic. I mean, if, for example, you know, Rafa, you've just said if you were given a magic wand and you could sign any player, you would sign a midfielder. But I think everybody that I know thinks we need a striker. Now, if we were given the opportunity, supposing Mitrovic hadn't been at Newcastle and we were given the opportunity to sign a current international, proven international goal scorer, would we have been happy to sign Alexander Mitrovic at the time? I think everybody said, yeah. So can you please explain to us all what went wrong with Mitrovic?
I was not expecting this question. Eh?
Before Rafa answers, I just would like to say I spent quite a long time with Alexander yesterday, and he had only lovely things to say about Rafa and how much he learned from you. And he feels you're both on the same wavelength in terms of the passion for Newcastle. He's a big Newcastle fan. He loves the club. He would like nothing more than to get Fulham promoted, get Serbia through the group stage of the World Cup, prove to you that he's learned his lesson about his discipline. It's his discipline is a problem. And come back to Newcastle, the club he loves, and prove to you that he can be a good striker.
I didn't answer about which player, which position, I say, in general, for a team, any team, the holding midfielder, the midfielder that can create and can defend and can stay there and dictate the tempo of the game.
That wasn't about Newcastle, because yeah, that was your yeah, position was as a player. Yeah, yeah,
so yeah. I didn't say anything about Newcastle when you say, oh, we need this. It's not fair for me to say we need this, that, that. I have already told our people that, and we know I don't want to disrespect any of our players, no? Apart from our team, the position of the striker, obviously, is crucial. We say Fernando Torres was making a big difference. It's crucial for any team. Mitro, I have had a lot of conversation with him, and he needed to play, and I couldn't guarantee that he would play. Then some people say, oh, Rafa is a stubborn, and then he doesn't want to recognize that he made a mistake. No, it's not like this. Because if it was like this, I would not play Mitro any time. I was playing sometimes the last 20 minutes. So why? Because I wanted him to score the winning goal. So people, they forget one thing. The players they play, or they are on the bench, or they are in the stands. The manager is always playing every single game. So I want to win every single game. It doesn't matter who will score the winning goal. Or it's just to be sure that I pick the right team and we can win. So Mitro, he needed to play. And I couldn't guarantee the way that we wanted to play the if you know Mitro really well, if you attack and you create chances and then you make crosses, he will score goals. No doubt about that. He will score goals. But a team that has 40, 45, 35%, it depends on the game's possession, you have to defend, you have to work hard in defense, you have to play counter-attack sometimes. And if you don't have all these players that they can do that, then you have to sacrifice something. And we were talking about the main thing of this team is the team, the organization of the team and the work rate of the team. Because if we don't do that, we'll be exposed. As soon as we were winning against Manchester United 1-0 or against Chelsea 1-0, we were a little bit open, we conceded, and then when you are open, the second half in the FA Cup against Chelsea. So when we conceded the second goal, we were open because we have to attack. We couldn't manage, we couldn't control. So for us, the team is the key. And the characteristics of the players are crucial. And then we did what we expect that can be the best for both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just want to thank you all for coming, for being Times subscribers. I hope you continue to do that. And it's been a really, really enjoyable evening. I would normally thank the panel, but I would like to hand over to George, who's going to say the final word. And thank you to Rafa.
Yes. When we first approached Rafa and people close to Rafa about doing tonight, we told him that there would be a fee available to him, a fee which is small by most standards, but tiny by football standards. It's a measure of Rafa as a man that he asked us to make a donation to Newcastle's food bank. So,
he's not telling the truth. He's not telling the truth. He said it's a small fee. It's a big fee for the foundation.
Believe me, it's not. Anyway, but it makes me angry and it makes me ashamed that in this beautiful, wonderful city of ours that people are going hungry, but it makes me very proud indeed to be able to know that football has played a huge role in shining a light on the issue and also raising funds. Going to the food bank has become part of the match day experience, like buying a programme, like having a drink with your mates. And at the end of it, you get a sense of contributing to something bigger than you. And if that's not what a club is about, it certainly is to me. It's not the first time Rafa has made this kind of gesture, and it's also not the first time that people at the club have made similar gestures. And Lee Charnley, for example, the managing director, has volunteered at the food bank, and he's done that without publicity. So I would like to say that although sometimes there is tension between club, fans, media, journalists, we all share, I hope, a sense of humanity and care about the communities we work in and live in. And if you haven't checked out the work of the food bank, please do. But Rafa, thank you very much. That's an amazing
pleasure.
Thank you.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.